Welcome to Massive Late Fee. And now your hosts, Mark and Carol.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to Massive Late Fee. My name is Mark. With me as always is my wife, Carol. How are you doing today, Carol?
Hey, what's up?
How much has been a good week here? It is August. It is April.
Wow.
It's April 16th, 1999.
Now, if you look out the window.
They both start with A.
You can see a lot of rain,
yeah,
I believe.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Not sweltering heat.
August showers bring September flowers,
sure.
They say. You don't remember that? That old yarn?
I remember April showers, sure. I do.
I dated a girl named April once.
Did you?
Got some April showers. Anyways.
Disgusting.
Oh, that's something that could have appeared in the movie we watched, everyone. Spoilers, but it didn't. Carol.
Yeah.
What? Why? All of a sudden, there's no fun left in you.
I am having a day. And you said, like, some things earlier in front of our nephew.
Come on. You don't think, like, you're mad about that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Carol.
Oh, Mark.
Are you seriously mad about that?
Mm-hmm. Especially because I spent the whole 5 minutes you were pumping gas deflecting questions from our niece as to what was so funny and what I was so mad about.
Sorry, I'm sorry. It was a joke.
She's like, but I want to know. But he's laughing and you're mad and I want to know why.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I apologize. You waited until we got on the air to bring any of this up so that I would apologize live in front of our massive audience?
Yes, sir.
Well, I apologize. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. You may or may not be forgiven.
Oh, my God. Wait, what?
We'll see.
What does that mean?
We'll see how the day goes.
You expect me to continue a show now under threat like that?
Aw, it's not a threat.
I'm going to stop. I'll just stop recording.
What?
I said I'll just stop recording. I'm not. I do not negotiate with terrorists. I will not be pressured in this way.
Okay. I love you.
I love you too. Do you forgive me or not?
Who's threatening who here? Sir.
What a time to bring that up.
I wave my glove at you. Isn't that a thing?
Some, yeah. It's some kind of thing. What about an over-the-top TV bio, though, Carol?
What about it?
It could make anyone not like Mike.
Who the hell's Mike?
Michael Jordan. Best to fess up right now, I'm sick of Michael Jordan. I was instantly irritated by the media gush over his retirement. I'm glad the Chicago Bulls are finally losing, and I'm thrilled that Michael Jordan, an American hero, debuting at 8 p.m. on Fox Family Channel, is a monumentally forgettable, shabbily made slice of TV movie biography hokum.
Wow.
Hero, Schmiro. Jordan is the greatest basketball player ever to grace the planet, I guess. No argument there. I mean, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But cosmic jump shots, magical moves, and humongous Nike-fueled celebrity do not a hero make. Billed as an, quote, unauthorized biography of basketball's ultimate superstar, Michael Jordan, an American hero, is written with all the grace, imagination, and intelligence you might expect from Michael J. Murray, the guy who penned Madonna, Innocence Lost, and the true story of the Menendez murders. Two other schlocky TV movies.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I hate Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Because of, I'm, you
things.
Know, well, because of the Pistons, because I am a Pistons fan,
mm-hmm.
and an Isaiah Thomas fan, and Michael Jordan's a piece of shit. And Michael
Wow,
Jordan,
tell us how you really feel.
And Michael Jordan, you just the same way you told me right now how you really feel, I'm going to tell you how I feel about Michael Jordan, and I don't forgive him. He conspired with the league. To change
I just flashed him just in case anybody was wondering what happened.
So now I don't even know. Now, like, every thought evaporated from my head. So now I don't know. Now I don't know what I was even talking about. Does that mean you forgive me?
I guess.
Oh, my goodness.
Ugh. I was just trying to get you in a better mood. You got all upset and flustered. Now you're just flustered.
Anyway, Jordan conspired with the league to screw the Detroit Pistons. And they changed all the rules so he could dominate.
And assholes.
I'm glad he's dead, I was going to say. But
what the fuck?
But he's not dead. I'm glad.
I mean, he's dead to you, apparently.
I'm glad he's not in
got death on the mind.
I'm glad he's not in basketball anymore. I only wish that he would have lost.
Any celebrity deaths in the paper today?
No. No, why?
What? Unfortunate.
Wow.
That's the kind of mood I'm in.
I was going to say, you are in a weird mood today, aren't you? Let me scan real quick.
No.
Why don't you vamp?
What?
And I'll scan.
There's no celebrity deaths in the paper today, okay? I was just, you know, being weird. That's what I do.
You are weird.
I am weird.
You got death on the brain.
Do you want to know what he said? Because I could say what you said.
Basketball?
He said something about the sucking.
Okay, so we got something to drink. Okay, let's be real. Mm-hmm. We got something to drink, and the straw was not large enough to accommodate drinking this drink. This is like a milkshake type drink, right? And so you were complaining.
Yeah,
that you had to do all this sucking.
It hurt my mouth. That's what I said, that all the sucking hurt my mouth.
And we both kind of snickered about that. And your nephew, who's 14, in the back seat, who, you know, kind of gets it or whatever, was like snickering too, right?
Inappropriate, but yes.
So then you said something like that you like weirdness or something like that. And I was like, that's why you married me, right? Because you like weirdness. And then I said, and I married you because of all the sucking.
And then my nephew lost his mind laughing, and my niece wanted to know what was so funny. And he just exited the car.
I had to pump gas.
And left me holding that ball. Good times, good times.
Yeah. It was good times. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Regis Cordic died today.
Who's that?
A actor, an American radio presenter.
I thought you were going to say Regis Philbin. Then I would have been a little sad.
No, Regis Philbin's alive and well and living in hell.
Cool. Let's move along here.
All right, let's move along. Move along, everyone. Hey, that's a line from Star Wars.
It is.
A New Hope, yeah, where he's like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And he's like, yeah, these aren't the droids I'm looking for. You controlled my mind. And he was like, move along. And he's like, move along, move along.
Mm-hmm.
So that dovetails perfectly into our next thing.
Sure.
Jedi Knights Cyber Days.
Jedi Knights Cyber Days.
A Troy couple's website echoes the philosophical appeal of Star Wars. Dave and Lauren Phillips share their Star Wars interest with son Kyle, 7.
Okay. Well, I liked Star Wars when I was that little. Did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
When it came out, yep. Something's wrong here. This doesn't look like the command center of the Force. There's no lightsabers piled in the corner, no Wookiees scurrying in the shadows, no 4D galactic maps. But don't let the modest surroundings mislead you. Dave and Lauren Phillips's unassuming tract house in Troy is home to one of the most prolific and most highly respected Star Wars sites on the World Wide Web. The site, it's called Echo Station, receives more than 2.2 million hits a day.
Oh, wow.
Wow. From nearly,
I wish that we got that many people listening to our tapes.
2.2 million, yeah, that'd
be
great.
Amazing.
Nearly 31,000 visitors, its pages, there are hundreds, are filled with an array of Star Wars-related activities, from crossword puzzles and art galleries to chat rooms and a sprawling archive of essays. the online onslaught had grown so enormous and so expensive to operate that a year ago, the Philipses launched a profit-making web hosting company that provides online space for other companies just to underwrite Echo Station's activities. Outwardly, there's almost no hint of what's taking place here. There are his and hers computers sitting around the corner from one another and a limited edition Star Wars print hanging over Dave's living room desk. But the rest, the wedding picture on the wall, the washer and dryer in the next room, the entertainment center with its smoky glass doors that dominate the living room. Is he trying to sell this
house?
What
is happening? Yeah, like, why are we getting all the details of these people's house?
Is all so terribly ordinary. Wow.
Not insulting at all.
In the virtual world of the internet, though, it's easy for this to be front line of the Star Wars invasion. Despite appearances, the Empire doesn't live here. So EchoStation.com came to life in the mid-90s. No one's sure precisely Okay, so they don't even know the year when they started this.
Interesting.
As a forum for Star Wars fans who were members of CompuServe, Lauren Dayek was 30 when she discovered it in June of 1995. She'd spent 4 years in relative isolation at home with her young son Kyle as her Aww. Primary source of conversation. So what do you think about that?
I feel sorry for her.
That's the limited edition print right there. It's a bunch of lightsaber shit.
Cool. I can't really see it. But...
What do you think? A family that created a Star Wars website. There's a new Star Wars coming out to this year.
I think it's cool. I think it's brilliant. I think it's almost as great as our idea to do our show.
I agree.
But somehow, just because they get to ride the coattails of actual Star Wars, they get more people listening. Whatever. Yeah,
2 point. They're not listening.
They're reading. They're visiting the website. I don't know.
Have you been mixing cold medications again? Like, what is going on?
Maybe. Shh.
All right. Speaking of drugs, Carol.
Yes.
We watched a movie.
We did.
Go.
It was a really, really...
No, go. Get the fuck out of
no.
here.
No. It was a really, 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 really good movie.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I really liked it. It was fun.
Yeah. Tell me about it. So what did you like about Go?
I loved the music. Mm-hmm. I loved the story. I loved the acting and the characters and everything about it.
Okay. So every element.
Yes. Yes. So they were doing kind of like the Pulp Fiction thing where like it's... It wasn't like that, though, exactly, because it wasn't out of order. It was just three different perspectives.
Correct.
So.
It goes back and forth in time, I guess, and that's, there's one thing that's out of order. The beginning of the movie is the tail end of a conversation that happens towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Which we pick up later.
Yeah.
But then the rest of the movie is told... From, you, like you said, three separate perspectives. There's Rana, played by Sarah Pauly, who needs money so that she doesn't get evicted from
on her, Christmas.
From her place, yeah.
That's bullshit. And I kind of agree with Simon. I don't think they would actually have evicted her on Christmas, because who's going to spend their Christmas doing that?
Yeah, no shit. Plus, they need to give you notice and shit like that. Like, yeah. there are a bunch of laws to prevent them from just... But, I mean, maybe they've already given her notice. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe she was on her last day of her notice or something.
Right. Then there's Simon, who goes to Las Vegas... With some people, Taye Diggs gets his groove back, and
was that Taye Diggs?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's his name? Brecken Meyer, who is in Clueless.
Oh yeah, the pot guy.
Yeah, he's there too, and somebody else who I don't know.
Yeah.
And then sorry, there's, dude. Yeah. And then there's Scott Wolfe and Jay Moore.
Their story is really funny.
There's Burt Sugar.
I think theirs is the funniest.
You remember? You recognize Burt Sugar, though, right?
No.
Jay Moore played Burt Sugar in Jerry Maguire.
Oh, yeah.
A movie we did.
Yeah.
He's the one that steals all of Tom Cruise's clients. And then Scott Wolf was on that show, Party of Five.
Oh, yeah. We watched a couple episodes of that.
Mm-hmm. And then that's it, right? There's only three storylines, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then everything kind of coalesces together. But yeah, they cross. Some of the storylines cross a little bit. And then sometimes they coincide with each other. People meet up and all that stuff. So that's kind of what it's like. Ever since Pulp Fiction came out in 1994, there has been a wave of films trying to capture what was good about that movie. And what was good about that movie was the fact that Quentin Tarantino knows how to direct a film.
Yeah.
And the dialogue, the script. The script is good and tight, and it's a well-paced and directed film. And I think that's honestly the lesson that directors should take from that movie is know how to pace your film, know how to pace a scene, know how to structure a movie. Not let's try to make it exactly like they made Pulp Fiction. But this one, I think, does a better job of that. I think this movie could exist in a world where Pulp Fiction doesn't exist.
Yeah, for sure.
I think this is clearly the best of those kind of movies, I guess, that were maybe born out of the shadows, so shall we say, of Pulp Fiction. Doug Liman directed this movie. He directed Swingers, which we saw a couple years ago.
Which is a great hangout movie. Mm-hmm. And this is also a great hangout movie. Like, you feel like you want to be friends with these people, mm-hmm. even though they're all fucking crazy assholes.
And there's an energy to the filmmaking
mm-hmm.
that really resonates. And the movie's over 2 hours long. It does not feel its length.
It was over 2 hours long, really?
It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes, yeah.
Wow, yeah, it does not.
And it does not feel its length at all. It really pulls you along, and it keeps your attention with interesting scenes all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I said, there's a real kinetic energy to the way he makes this film that really resonates. This is only like his second film, I think. I'm pretty sure Swingers was... He might have had like a student film or something like that was released, but I'm pretty sure Swingers was basically his first film.
Okay.
And this is his second feature. The guy that wrote this, I can't remember his name. I think his last name's August. or April. But this is his first screenwriting gig.
Okay. Well, he did a fantastic
job. Yeah, it's very, very good. So, like you said, I think the music, the music's good. The casting, I think, is really good, too. Mm-hmm. The casting really pulls everything together. So, Katie Holmes is in this.
Yeah, and she gets top bill, which I have to disagree with. I mean, I realize she's probably the most famous, but, like, she does not have the biggest role. I think Rana had a much larger role than her.
Yeah, I think Rana is the de facto star. It's more of an ensemble film. I don't know that I'd really say there's one star.
Well, no, there's not, because there's three separate storylines, and Rana's only in one of them, but I think that one was the biggest of the storylines.
Well, she was kind of in two of them.
Was she?
Sort of. I mean, spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers, she's...
You're right.
She's part of one of the storylines.
Yeah.
But, She looks a lot like a young Uma Thurman.
She does. She could be like her cousin or daughter or something.
Which I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but...
What do you mean on purpose? I mean, like, it's not like they manufactured her.
No, but I mean, they cast her.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she happened to show up. It's not like they were planning, let's find somebody who looks like Uma Thurman.
But maybe they were, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe they wanted someone that looked like Uma Thurman. Maybe they wanted that aesthetic for their lead.
Maybe.
Anyway, so Katie Holmes, like I said, is in this. She mostly shares time with another young actor named Timothy Oliphant.
Oliphant.
And, yeah, whatever. And, no, I know. I know why you are defending. Like, you, nothing can besmirch the name of this guy. You should have seen Carol's seat was wet after.
Oh, stop that.
When we left the theater.
Don't be gross.
No, you liked this guy.
Yeah, sure. So? You like Katie Holmes?
Well, Katie Holmes is more attractive in this than... And she was more attractive in that other terrible movie. She was in
Disturbing Behavior.
Yeah. But she's more attractive than she is on Dawson's Creek, and I think I know why.
Okay, why? I want to hear this. I've been waiting to hear this.
I think the way they do her makeup and her hair, and to, and to some degree her clothes too, is they want her to look young and she is young, but they want her to look younger and virginal. Mm-hmm. And like, they're really playing down her looks, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And when she's allowed to be in a movie like this, where she's a young adult and everything, she's, you know, she's allowed to be prettier.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Like, she looks, I mean, she's still her no matter what. And
yeah, it's not like her face is completely changed, but just what they have her dressed in, how her hair's done, how her makeup's done, it has an effect.
Disturbing Behavior was much different. Like, she was dressed more like, you know, tough. She was in leather. She had piercings. Mm-hmm. She really, I mean, other than maybe a little bit more makeup, because Joey doesn't hardly wear any makeup in Dawson's Creek, she's kind of the same. Like, I could see Joey even wearing the outfit she's wearing. It's not super sexy or anything.
Not the last one. Not the one where she's, you know, when she's... She's got the boobs and stuff. I don't think so.
It's just a tank top.
Yeah, I don't think Joey'd be wearing that.
You don't think Joey would wear a tank top?
No.
We will see her in a tank top multiple times. I can guarantee it. They live on a fucking beach.
They live in a dreary New England town. What a beach day for them is.
But I mean, she works on the water.
68 degrees. Let's get on the beach. The hottest day of the year.
I'm just saying, like, it wasn't super revealing or anything.
That's a horrible Maine accent, by the way.
I just think she's such a good actress.
Yeah, they sound like that, yeah.
Do they? Well, they don't sound like that on Dawson's Creek.
It's a big, no, they don't. Well, that's interesting, too. It's what I call the Dawson's Creekification of Hollywood. These young actors, they have just nothing accents.
Yeah.
They have just generic American accent. And I assume that it mostly comes from the exposure to TV and stuff like that. But regional accents are, like, dying.
Yeah.
At least in media they are.
That's kind of a bummer. But what I was trying to say is that Katie Holmes.
Yes.
Is such a good actress that, like, she just takes every character and makes it different. So it's like, even though she looks like Joey, she's not playing Joey, and you can tell that. Like, she makes this a different person. I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, I watch, you know, Katie Holmes every week. I'm just watching this character being like, oh, it's Claire now.
Right. When he asks her if she's a virgin, I don't get the sense that she is.
Well, no.
But she does. That face that she makes is hilarious.
Well, yeah, she's so shocked by the question. But it was from Breakfast Club, just if anybody is wondering.
No, yeah. I know.
No, I know you know.
Are you a virgin, Claire?
Answer the question, Claire.
She gets it, too, eventually.
Yeah. And she's like, oh. She looks so afraid of him. And then she's like, they'll be here any minute. Like, does she think he's going to rape her? Like,
maybe.
Asked if she's a virgin. And
he's a criminal.
Like, scared. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of Joey-esque, actually, her reaction to that.
Yeah, but it doesn't, but she still doesn't, like you said, I don't get shades of Joey really at all in this. But yeah, what did you think of the structure of the movie? Starting with Rania and then going to those guys last.
I liked it. Especially like, and the guys overlap in Rania's story and Rania overlaps in the guy's story.
Yeah.
The only one that's totally separate really, and even that has some overlap, is Simon. But that's more of a separate story until the end of the movie.
Yeah, Simon makes the phone call.
Yeah.
So to Timothy Oliphant.
But I think there's just enough overlap in each of the stories to, like, connect it and keep that thread going without it being repetitive or boring or anything like that. It's just answering questions, really.
It is interesting that they have they all have such adventures on this day, like, you know, right before Christmas. But they're...
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve. It's so weird because it's not a Christmassy movie in any way, but it takes place on Christmas Eve.
But it takes place in California too, so there's no snow or anything. Like, it just looks like
and Vegas.
Day. Yeah, and Vegas. Yeah, but they all know each other because they all work at a grocery store together. Mm-hmm.
And Rania is supposed to be getting off work, and Simon's like gonna go ask her to take his shift, and Claire's like, no, don't. She's been working for 14 hours. That's insane. That poor girl. Go let her go home and go to bed.
Like, is that even legal anymore?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't. As long as they're paying overtime, then you can work as many hours as you want. I mean, I
guess that's true.
I worked 14 hours before. I worked 14 hours at 7-Eleven.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
I got pretty slap happy at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's the whole plot line of the story basically is that he wants to go to Vegas with his friends, so he needs someone to take his shift.
And Rania needs money because she's being evicted.
Yeah, so she does take his shift. And because of that...
It's Rana. We keep saying Rania. Rana.
Rana. Rana. Rana. I'm sorry, Rana. Yeah.
I like your friend Rania.
Sarah Pauly. So, what if Rania was in this movie?
She'd been fine. She's a good actress.
She would have played what? The Katie Holmes character, probably?
Yeah.
I could see that, honestly.
Yeah.
Rania, if you listen to the show. Late Fee 1994. Shout out. Anyway, so what was your favorite of the storylines?
Oh, it's hard to pick. I mean, I guess I think I'm going to go with Rania because, that's most of the movie. I think that's probably the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
And the adventures she goes on, like...
are pretty crazy.
Her friend, too, the guy that's with her, like, when he takes two hits of E... when they were told only one, and he's so far gone, and the hilarity of what's going on in his brain throughout the movie is funny.
That's where most of the humor, I think, comes from, is that situation. The thing with the cat is hilarious.
Yeah, they were playing this game at work about, like, I don't know, naming a celebrity, dead celebrity, right?
Yeah, it has to be dead celebrities. Someone names one, and then... someone has to name the other. Well, the other one's first name has to start with the same letter as the previous one's last name. So if you said, like, let me think of a dead celebrity. If I said, like, Jack Benny, then you would have to say someone whose first name starts with B.
Brian something. I don't know.
Sure, Brian.
I can't
something.
Think of it.
How about Brian? No, Brian Wilson's still alive. Dennis Wilson's dead. I don't know. Like,
this is a hard game.
Billy Wilder.
Okay.
The director.
Sure. So that's the game they're playing.
Right.
And then he's all like stoned, and they were having trouble coming up with people whose first name started with an X.
Because she said one of the ones she said was Malcolm X, and they challenged her and said you can't do Malcolm X because Katie Holmes is like, I challenge you to name one person whose name starts with X. One famous person, dead famous person, name start with X.
And she comes up with Xerxes. Or no, she doesn't. She doesn't. The guy comes up with it later. He says it to her. And
yeah, they play this game because they play this game to see who has to go up front.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when she had missed defeat and she's like, okay, I'm going up front or whatever. The guy comes up to her and he's like, you could have said Xerxes.
Xerxes would have saved your ass. But then he's hallucinating.
But I don't think Xerxes would have saved her ass.
Why?
Because Xerxes doesn't have a last name. How would one play from that point on? Xerxes is correct. Xerxes is was a pharaoh and is dead. But Xerxes doesn't have a last name. So where are you supposed to go from there?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. But so the cat in the drug dealer's apartment.
I would have said Xavier Cugat.
Okay. Cugat?
Yeah.
Cool. You know, I didn't even get the game because I thought it was just going like A, B, C, D, E. I didn't realize that it was.
I love teaching you things.
Anyways, he's hallucinating, and cat is talking to him in his brain, and he says,
Shang-Kai-Shek.
Yeah.
The cat goes, I can read your thoughts, and he's just staring at him. And what makes it funnier is, I don't think it would have been as funny if the cat talked.
Mm-hmm.
If someone did a voiceover of the cat and the cat talked, I don't think it would have been as funny.
No.
I think subtitles is much funnier, because underneath the cat are subtitles that say, like, I can read your thoughts. And he just stares at the cat, and the cat says, Chiang Kai-shek, with an X. He's like a famous Chinese ruler dude. Name starts with an X. And then he doesn't say anything either. He just thinks at him. Mm-hmm. No, it's Chiang Kai-shek with a C-H and not an X. And then we just go back to the cat, and the cat's subtitles say, You're going to die.
It's hilarious.
It's one of the funniest things I've seen in a movie in a long time. But yeah, it was the movie was very good. I do see. I don't think it's too Pulp Fiction-y.
No.
I think it's maybe a little unfair to label any movie that doesn't fit with the normal structure of a narrative as a Pulp Fiction movie. Because, you know, this one doesn't just go ABC, just doesn't go down the line. Mm-hmm. It's split up into different perspectives. But people have done that before Pulp Fiction, and I think movies will do that after,
yeah,
obviously. To me, like I said, this doesn't seem too Pulp Fiction-y, although I get the comparisons. Especially the scene at the end, or towards the end, when they're in the diner, when Katie Holmes meets Timothy Oliphant in the diner, and they're talking about the family circus and mm-hmm. stuff like that. That kind of, like, pop culture-y type stuff, it's very reminiscent of, like, John Travolta and Uma Thurman having their conversation.
About the milkshake.
Yeah, about the milkshakes and about the show she was going to be on and the jokes and all that stuff.
Or him and Samuel L. Jackson talking about the fucking Royale with cheese, too.
Yeah, exactly. The dialogue has that kind of light sort of snappiness mm-hmm. to it, but it's not, like I said, I don't even look at it as an homage necessarily. I think it's wholly original enough. I don't think Tarantino's a fantastic director, but I don't think Tarantino can hold a patent on discussing pop culture in your movies.
No, for sure.
I mean, like, Kevin Smith does it too. And yeah. Kevin Smith, technically, well, I guess they came out the same year, although I think Clerks did come out before Pulp Fiction. But obviously, they neither influenced each other because those scripts would have been written before the other movies came out. So, but yeah, like, it's not. And honestly, I think. This is, to me, this movie is sort of the middle ground between Pulp Fiction and Clerks.
Okay.
Or, like, you know, one of Kevin Smith's movies. It's not as violent things aren't as heightened either yeah. as they are in Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction creates its own kind of reality, a very heightened reality. The bad stuff that goes on, the crime stuff that goes on, that stuff is more grounded. It's grittier.
It feels more real.
Exactly. Like, Pulp Fiction is very heightened for, you know, not in a bad way, for cinema purposes, but this does feel grittier.
Although, in the second story with Simon going to Vegas,
yeah,
the shit that goes on there is a little much. It's a little over the top. I don't think it's reality. Like, They go to a strip club.
Some of the stuff that happens is reality, but the ultimate payoff of it is not reality.
Yeah. So they go to the strip club. Well, first they're walking out of a casino, and this asshole,
the Riviera,
like, because Taye Diggs' character is wearing this, like, orange
because he's black and he has a disgusting looking blazer on.
He assumes that he's the valet and mm-hmm. tosses him the keys and says, "Keep it close." So they just steal this man's car.
Yeah, a Ferrari.
Which is insane. But okay, I mean, believable. They drive to a strip club. Mm-hmm. Fine.
The Crazy Horse, the strip club that Timothy Oliphant recommends they go to.
Now, Taye Diggs says to Simon, mm-hmm. whatever you do, don't order champagne because that's a private lap dance.
Yeah.
And of course, expensive. And of course he does.
Well, yes, his character has been shown to be an idiot.
And very horny.
For the entirety of the... Well, that's the thing, because earlier... He has a threesome earlier.
Before this, really.
Yeah. That's another... Let's talk about that scene real quick, because that's a scene that I think is a little ridiculous. Before we go into the strip club thing, since it happened before. Or I guess we can be non-linear and talk about it out of order. Go ahead and talk about the strip club.
Well,
I don't want to do anything else I need to apologize for later. So you do your thing.
No,
here,
so
I'll flash you.
Oh my goodness!
I can't get my pants off.
he's got a struggle there with the zipper and everything.
Because it's so big, it's hard to get out.
Anyway, so they're getting their private dance, and mm-hmm. Simon can't keep his hands to himself, even though they're told they can touch you, you cannot touch them.
And he went to touch the one girl's boobs, and she said no, don't touch.
Yeah, she was nice about it. Then he grabs the other one's ass, and she's like, hands. And then the guy comes in, and he, like, starts beating the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. Now, they were warned, but still, I think that was a little over the top.
I do think that would possibly happen, though.
Sure. And then Taye Diggs' character grabs the gun.
They found a gun in the
Ferrari,
in the glove box of the Ferrari.
And he shoots the guy.
He says
he shoots him to get him to stop beating up Simon, which, you know,
Simon shoots.
Oh, Simon! Simon shoots him.
Yeah, because
you're right.
Yeah, because Taye Diggs comes over and is like, "Get the fuck off him," or whatever. He's defending his friend, and the guy goes, "Would you think you can kick my ass?" And they square up to like fight each other or whatever. And at that point, Simon's gotten off the ground, and he shoots the guy in the arm. And there's blood everywhere. There's blood all over the naked strippers.
Yeah. So then they get into a car chase, and this is where it gets really ridiculous.
This is ridiculous. I agree with that.
I mean, first of all, they're chasing them. They go to their hotel. The guys brought tools to break into the hotel room. I mean, that seems like a little...
that was pretty interesting.
Little much.
Not just breaking down the... They were prepared with tools.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the guy's dad. We don't learn it's his dad till later. But the guy's dad comes and is sewing up his son's arm from the bullet wound, and he's like, "You fucking kids." And he's doing this, like, he's doing the whole, like, "In fucking my day." And all of his lines are delivered with his teeth, like,
gritted
together. But he's like, "In my day, I'll tell you what, you fucking, you got to where you got to because you killed everyone and you were the best." And he's like, "You fucking kids fail up now and stuff, and you suck, and fuck you, and your participation trophies, fuck you."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an ass.
And he's like, "We're going to fucking go after this guy."
So, yeah. So they break into the hotel room. These guys have managed to get out through the adjoining room by bribing the child.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're chasing them through the hotel parking garage. Did they fucking park their car, like, in the hotel parking garage? Like, "Hey, what's up? We're just here to kill somebody." Like... I mean, that seems a little dumb to begin with.
What was their plan? To go in the room, kill the four guys, and then go down, have some food, like gamble a little bit, then leave?
What the fuck? And then they chase them through the streets of Vegas.
Yeah.
And they get on their phone in their car. Or no, the police officer gets on his phone, sorry. Yeah, they pull up next to the police officer. And he gets on his phone, and then he turns away, and all the other police turn away, and they just get to keep chasing him. And they're like, "They have people. They own this town." Like, no, come on. I mean, it's this one dude with a strip club. This is not, like, the mafia boss of Las Vegas.
Is that what happened?
I don't know. That's what they're saying. I mean, that's what he was, you know, implying, that that's why the police went away. I don't know.
I don't even remember him being on a phone in the car.
The police? Yeah. He got on his walkie thing.
Oh, sure. Okay.
But they're like, "They own this town."
Oh, they think that those ones are the ones that tell, I guess. Yeah. That's a reach to me.
I agree. And then they get away, but yet they go all the way to L.A. to get them.
And then when they get to L.A., he's like going to kill him or whatever and stuff like that. And Timothy Olyphant and Katie Holmes are there because they come to that guy's apartment because they used his credit card. And they're like... "Hey, maybe don't kill him, though. Like, that seems unfair."
Yeah, you want justice.
And he's like, "What happened?" He's like, "We got shot in the arm." He's like, "Okay, well, shoot him in the arm, then."
Yeah.
And then Simon's all, like, good with it. "Yeah, shoot me in the arm. I'm fine."
I mean, as an alternative to being killed, I would see being okay with it.
He does seem like a happy-go-lucky kind of I-don't-care idiot
sort
of character.
He doesn't realize the problems he's going to have probably for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, though. At the very, very end, Katie Holmes is walking down the stairs. She's like, "Fuck this, I gotta go to work." She leaves. And then you hear a gunshot, and Simon's like, "It's okay, I'm all right." Did they shoot him in the arm? Is he saying, "It's okay, I'm all right," after being shot in the arm? Or do you think, like, the gun just went off and he didn't get shot at all?
I think he got shot in the arm.
How do you sound that fucking happy after being shot in the goddamn arm?
I don't know. But it's funny because they mention that the one gun's a 9mm, right? He's like, "Oh, you wouldn't be able to kill anyone. That's a 9mm. You don't have the stopping power." The gun that the other guy had was like a snub-nose 38 special, like a police special. That's a more powerful gun.
And it was at close range.
It was right on his skin.
They put an X. Like, do you really think that you're... I mean, first of all, are you able to hit a bullseye?
I don't know. I could.
I mean, oh, could you?
Yes, I could.
Okay. It just seemed kind of dumb. The whole thing seemed dumb.
Well, yeah, that's more for comedy, I think.
Yeah.
That's part of the comic relief of the movie. I don't think we're supposed to think that hard about that part.
All right, now you can talk about the threesome. What do you got to say about this threesome?
So, Taye Diggs talks about how he's dating this woman who teaches couples to have sex, to have
tantric sex,
where they redirect their orgasm internally instead of externally, and then their orgasms can last a long time. He says he had an orgasm that lasted 14 hours one time.
18
hours. Oh, I was thinking of the entire shift of...
Right.
But yeah, 18-hour orgasm. That's too much.
Yeah. Well, he said they had sex for 18 hours. I don't know that he was orgasming the whole time.
No, he said his longest... Oh, no, he said an hour and a half.
Yeah.
That's right. Their longest lovemaking section was 18 hours. The longest orgasm was an hour and a half. And I was like, I would not want to be orgasming for an hour and a half.
No.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he talks about that, right? So this dude, Simon's like, oh, you know, that sounds intriguing or whatever, basically. Later, he crashes this wedding. He picks up two bridesmaids, has a threesome with them, and having sex with the first one, it's like, it looks like, you know, everything's getting close. There's moaning and stuff going on. And then it's weird because the woman he's not inside of is like, did you go, you know, or whatever? And he's like, no. And she goes, why not? And he goes, tantra, baby. Like, this woman teaches this class, like weeks long class or months long class to couples to learn this. He heard about it once and was just able to do it instantly? Yeah. What kind of sense does that make?
Agreed. That's definitely a little unbelievable as well. But so, I think it's more unbelievable that this actor was supposed to be able to pick up these two women.
Right.
Because, I mean, he's not attractive.
They weren't the most attractive women in the world, but they were, you know, fine.
But, I mean, I'm sorry, two women? How does he manage two?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was pretty ridiculous, too.
And I guess the accent helps.
So if I walked around like this, I'd get a lot more women too, huh?
I don't know. I don't.
Oh, you didn't like my accent.
I didn't like his accent either, but they seemed to. I don't like the Irish accent.
No, I think
that's what he was doing.
I could do a better accent, I think.
But I think he was English. That's the weird thing. Yeah, he was putting on an Irish accent. But
I know. I thought that was weird too. Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense to me. Anyway. So then the last storyline is Scott Wolfe and Jay Moore, who play actors on some soap opera, but they're also gay lovers.
But we didn't actually finish Rana's story at all.
Okay.
We barely started it.
Okay.
So she needs money to pay her rent. She takes Simon's shift. And those two from the last story, is that why you brought them up?
Mm-hmm.
They come through her checkout line and are asking if she can score them drugs because Simon's not there, and they usually get E from him.
Correct.
And she's like, oh, I'll see what I can do, because she's like, oh, I need money.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening to you. Go.
Go. So she agrees. Now, my question is, she took his shift.
Yeah.
How long is his shift? Because she's already been there for 14 hours.
This was a different day. This is the next day.
No, it was all...
She was punching out.
Yeah, but then she turned around and went back in because she took his shift. It was immediate.
Seriously?
Yes. This was not a different day at all. She continued on after being for 14 hours. She went back to work another shift.
What the fuck?
So, like, I'm wondering, did she work for 24 hours?
They must have a 24-hour store.
And if she did work for 24 hours, she didn't go to bed after that. Because then she went and did the drug deal and everything. And she doesn't seem tired. So that's pretty unbelievable, too. Right?
Seriously.
But
to be young.
Right. But so she goes with Claire and the guy friend to the Timothy Oliphant's apartment and
to get ecstasy.
Yeah. And like he's like, so you're kind of stepping up the ladder here. I thought you were still buying quarters off of Simon, overpaying for quarters. What the fuck does that even mean? I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not a drug person. A quarter of a pill?
Yeah.
Overpaying for a quarter of a pill.
Yes.
Who takes a quarter of a pill?
Them.
That's stupid.
I don't. Sorry, we're not all seasoned drug users like you who's never done ecstasy in your life.
Of course, but I'm just saying. I mean, I've seen people, and it's like, you know, they usually get a whole pill.
Uh-huh. But sometimes you get a quarter of a pill because it's easier to afford.
I guess.
No, that's another one of those things where people might equate it to Pulp Fiction, like, you know, information that, like, criminal information they have that like the layman person doesn't have. She comes in and asks for 20, and he's like, oh, you just fucking happened to come and ask for 20, which is the exact threshold of fucking from intent to sell to trafficking amount.
Which should have been a red flag to her right there when he was nervous about it. Maybe she should have been nervous about it.
Yeah, but she don't know.
So he agrees, even though, like, at first, you know, you're not even sure he's going to. He sells to her for more than he would sell to Simon for, though.
$15 yeah, because of inflation.
Instead of 10, which is what Simon would pay. Why are they such good friends? Simon is a sleazy, sleazy character. I mean, this guy's a drug dealer.
He's supposed to be, too.
But, I mean, he doesn't seem as sleazy, like, personality-wise, as Simon.
I know. He's so much more attractive. He can't be that bad of a character.
I just don't.
They don't make pretty people that bad. God would never do that.
I just don't see it. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So she goes to do this deal. And it's real weird. They had bought, like, a bunch of orange juice, which apparently is supposed to help, like, the ecstasy, like, in
your
system.
True. Yes, that's true.
So that makes sense. She asks for orange juice when they offer her something to drink. And he's the police officer that's there, by the way.
We don't know that at the time.
No.
But
he's like, oh, fresh out of OJ, want a cerveza? Like, he's acting like such a dork.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so much older than the rest of them. He sticks out. He shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
The whole thing is that I'm just going to blend both storylines together.
Because they do.
Scott Wolf and Jay Moore, they got in trouble for, like, they got...
For drugs.
For caught for possession or something like that, right? So they, like, basically he was like, well, where'd you get them from? I got them from Simon. And he's trying to use them to roll on the dealer, and then they were going to use Rana to roll on Timothy Oliphant's character, and then use him to keep going up the line, which I guess is what they try to do in real life. So that's what they were doing for them to, you know, get them out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I don't even know how, like, usually lawyers are involved in this shit and everything. Like, I don't know how, because he's like, I'll sign the paper for you and everything. I don't know how fucking, like, official any of this is. I honestly think that he was just fishing completely the entire time.
Yeah. Probably.
But anyway, she gets wind that this is not right. So she ends up flushing all the drugs down the toilet.
Well, she gets wind because we see later that one of the guys looks at her and mouths go.
But I think that...
She already knew.
I think she already knew. She seemed very wary the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So she flushes the drugs down the toilet and then leaves.
Which is so stupid. Like... Why would you flush all the E down the toilet? Like, I know she doesn't want to get caught with it, but they didn't stop her. They didn't search her. She could have walked out of there with it.
It seems like they wouldn't search her to me.
She should have just left.
I agree. But anyway, so she gets a bunch of, like, just regular cold medicine or whatever.
Well, back it up, though. She left Claire at Timothy Oliphant's apartment.
Yeah, as collateral.
Because she didn't have enough money to buy from him at the price he wanted.
Right.
So she gave him $200 and Claire.
Yeah. For $150 that she needs to bring back.
She needs to bring her back $100.
No, $150.
Okay.
$15. Wait, is that right? 15. What's 15 times 20?
$300.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. $100 then.
Yeah. So she's supposed to come back with more money. But she's now without the drugs, without the money. What's she going to do? So she goes, like you were saying, buys all these prescription pills and tries to pretend like she's just returning the pills to him.
Yeah.
Which he's not happy about either. Even thinking he is getting the pills back, he's like, oh, let me just write you a return slip.
Right,
like,
yeah, he's pissed.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm keeping $50 of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, way too agreeable to that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what tips him off, too, to be like,
Because he checks the pills later and he's like,
immediately, as soon as they're gone.
This is not the right stuff.
Yeah.
And
he gets his gun.
Yeah. So he tracks them down to this rave place where she starts selling the medication that she bought. She goes up to these two people. This is a brilliant idea. She goes up to these two people and she's like, yeah, it's really smooth and stuff. Helps if you take a lot of pot with it. A
lot of pot, yeah.
And they start spreading the word, all this good stuff, you know, and everything, good ecstasy and stuff. So people start coming up to her, and she ends up selling out her entire inventory.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like, she's got the money she needs now.
More than she owes him, as she tells him later when he finds her.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he finds them and starts threatening her with a gun.
So she's running away with the guy, mm-hmm. friend, who's the one who came up and warned her, which is kind of amazing because of how fried his brain was.
Right.
And they're, like, running through this, like, alley or whatever behind the club.
Yeah.
And she hides him under some garbage.
Right.
She's like, I'm going to get the car and come back for you, because he was really, like, out of it and sweaty and nasty. And
he was burning up.
Yeah, fever. He had a fever, because you get that with ecstasy, and he overdosed.
Yep.
But instead of being able to come back for him, as she's running away from Mr. Drug Dealer in the parking lot, she gets hit by the two guys who were trying to sell, you know, buy the drugs from her.
Yep.
They hit her with their car, she falls in a ditch, and they just leave.
Mm-hmm. They were there because they discovered that each of them was having an affair with the same guy.
That's so fucked up.
And he knew it and, like, was hiding it from them.
Well, yeah, because he was the hair and he was part of, like, the hair and makeup on the soap opera they work on.
Right.
So, like, they all know each other.
So they cut his hair. They took a big lock of his hair. He's got long, like, pretty long hair.
Not anymore.
But yeah, so they're, like, getting away from there, and they end up hitting her. And Timothy Oliphant looks outraged.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, that was literally, like, kind of a chuckle moment.
Right. And so then they morally debate what they should do about this situation afterwards. And they realize that they have the wire on still. So they're like, we gotta get rid of the body, because if there's no body, there's no crime. So they go back, and she's still alive. So Jay Moore, for a second, thinks about murdering her.
For more than a second, he picks up the shovel like he's gonna kill her.
This was kind of a funny thing, too, because he picks it up, and he's, like, holding it over. He's like, ah! And then he just stops, and he's like, okay, new plan. So then, like, they end up putting her on a car and setting the car's alarm off. And then everyone shows up, and they're like, oh, hey, it's her, you know, our drug dealer we love. And they call her an ambulance, and she wakes up in the hospital.
Yeah. And she is limping and looks pretty beat up.
It's, you know, honestly, though, she got off light for just being hit by the car.
Yeah.
And then she's at work and everything, and Katie Holmes looks over, and she's like, oh, my God, rough weekend, huh? And she's like, hey, where's... whatever their friend's name is.
Yeah, I don't know why either of us can remember.
She goes, oh, fuck. And then they go find him
Danny,
in the trash.
Danny, Manny?
Something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Then they go find him in the trash.
Yep. And he's like, so what do you want to do tonight?
My favorite part of the movie, I think, or one of my favorite parts of the movie, is when, now this is going back to the boys' storyline, is when the cop dude is like, yeah, I'll sign the paper. Just come back to my house or whatever. My wife and I are having, Jane Krakowski, my wife and I are having fucking early Christmas dinner or whatever. And Jay Moore's in the bathroom and everything. He comes out, and the dude is just completely naked and everything. And he's trying to talk to him all. He's like, listen, smell this. This is CK1. Mm-hmm. Smells like CK1, doesn't it? It's really good, great cologne. You know, feel this bedspread. And he's like, he's doing, like, in hindsight, you get what he's doing when you figure it out. But it all looks like he and his wife want to fuck him.
Well, the thing is, I don't think he ever realized that the two guys were a couple. Because
I don't either.
In the car earlier, like, they were asking if he had a girlfriend and if he was faithful. And he's like, not anymore, since I figure out she's cheating on me. And, like, so they end up talking. That's how they figure out they're cheating on each other.
Yeah.
Having this conversation as though they're talking about their girlfriends when they're really talking about each other.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it seems like he's coming onto him, but he's not, because he doesn't realize he's gay. That's why he thinks it's okay. He's walking around naked. I mean,
it's weird, too. Jane Krakowski kisses Scott Wolf. Like, what do you think that's about?
I think she wants to cheat on her husband.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I don't know. That's the impression we're supposed to get, but I feel like, I don't know, I feel like something else.
What, you feel like they want to have, like, a threesome, or?
No. I don't think it's sexual at all. We're supposed
to... Her kissing him wasn't sexual?
I don't think so. I don't think it's supposed to be. Because fucking the cop being completely naked in front of him is supposed to be sexual, and it's not.
But and there's no way that she put her tongue in his mouth, because they're talking about stage kisses, and she's like, and he's like, it's not real. He's like, you just do lips, no mouth, no tongue, and then she just kisses him, and he's like, but there was a tongue there. Like that's a real kiss.
I'm saying that like that doesn't make sense to me with what comes out later, because like,
what do you mean? What comes out later?
You get that they're not supposed to be sexual, right? This is not supposed to be sexual, or maybe it's supposed to be both. I don't know.
Because we find out
the ulterior motive. They say we brought you over for an ulterior motive, and we think they're going to be like, we want you all to have sex with my wife or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's like, no, we want you to sell Amway products. All this stuff that we've been showing you is all products from Confederate something. I don't remember.
It's like Amway.
It's Amway.
They even say you want us to sell Amway.
Amway is a company that's
a pyramid scheme.
For those of you that don't know, is a pyramid scheme created by Dick and Betsy DeVos, two people from right here in Michigan. Everyone, we're so proud of fucking David DeVos.
My mom and my stepdad sold some Amway for a while.
Yeah, it's a fucking scam. But anyway, they're the number three distributor in all of Los Angeles or something, which has got to be making them a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and he says like we can't recruit from the department, but I can recruit all these
criminals. So yeah. I can blackmail all these people who are in legal peril. And that's essentially what's happening.
Yeah.
I assume.
But I don't think that the wife kissing him had anything to do with that. I think the wife just thinks he's cute and wanted to kiss him.
Maybe. I guess that makes sense, I suppose. But it's like the whole scene is supposed to seem like they want to fuck them. But then the joke of it is the reveal is they don't. They want them to be multi-level marketing schemers or whatever with them. So it's like that's the part that doesn't fit to me.
So that's your favorite part of the movie?
If she had said something like, look, this lipstick doesn't come off or something like that, and that was another product they were selling,
right?
Then that I guess that would fit. But yeah, I don't know.
But she didn't.
I thought it was the funniest part. I thought it was maybe the funniest part, one of the funniest parts of the movie. I liked it a lot.
It was pretty good.
Some of the Vegas stuff was interesting, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the Vegas part was my favorite in any way, though.
The whole movie was great, though. Like, and each, like, the flavor of it, because they're a little bit different. Each storyline's a little different flavor-wise. And the way they meld together, I think, works really well, too.
But yeah, so like Katie Holmes is left with Timothy Oliphant for like hours, and she barely talks to him the whole time.
Yeah.
She's just scared sitting in his apartment. And then in the morning, she goes to the diner that they have agreed to meet at if they ever get separated, her and her friends.
Yeah.
And they don't come because, you know, one's hidden in trash and the other's in the hospital.
Correct.
So she sees Timothy Oliphant shows up there, and she just goes and sits down and is like, hey, you're going to buy me breakfast, because she didn't have any money.
Right.
And they end up, the next thing you know, they're making out on the stairs. She is undoing his pants on the stairs.
Yeah, and then the cat comes up.
Like, she was so afraid that he was going to try something, and now in the morning she's just like, fuck it, I'm going to start humping him on the stairs.
She's attracted to him.
But if she was attracted to him, why did she, like, not talk to him all night? That's just weird.
She's more comfortable with him now, because she was in a situation where she was left as, like, a hostage, basically, for the $100 that had to be brought to him. And so she felt trapped in that situation. Now she's here under her own free will.
Yeah, I guess.
So that fear is now gone.
But they don't have sex because the cat wanders out and you find out the gangsters from Las Vegas are in his apartment.
Do you think that they'll have sex at some point?
I don't know, because she seemed pretty disgusted with what was happening when she left. I think she might be turned off from him at that point.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So
wasn't his idea, but
he was like with it.
He was drawing a detailed map to Simon's house and everything. Like, it was so funny. Yeah.
I guess they're not that good of friends.
So if he's not here, he might be here.
Yeah, he was trying to help them find him.
So. Oh my goodness. But yeah, that's that's the movie.
It's such a good movie.
It's very good.
Definitely go see it.
We rarely go through the entire plot of a movie like that, but it's a very good movie. It's incredibly engaging.
Like, I want to see it again because I feel like it would be even more fun now that I know all this stuff.
One of the best movies we've seen in a while.
Yeah, definitely the best movie so far this year.
You think so? Better than The Matrix.
Yeah. I liked it better than The Matrix.
Interesting. It's so they're very different movies, yeah. Obviously, but they're, you know, it's they're close to me.
Just, you know, personally, my enjoyment level. Well, yes, The Matrix might be a quote unquote better movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. This was more enjoyable.
I assume Star Wars is going to be awesome, so this might be a good year for films.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll see. We've you know, these two are two of the better ones that we've seen lately. So this might be like another 94. We were blessed the first year we did this. This show, 1994, was like one of the best years ever for movies.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is the episode. Carol, why don't you tell people where they can go to see more great movies?
So you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/retrolatefee.
Yes.
Wait. Yeah, just retrolatefee.
You got it.
You can write us at latefee1994@AOL.com. Mm-hmm. And you can check out our website at www.retrolatefee.com.
All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.